It still seems like only yesterday. And every day you think about aspects of the investigation and Mel and Steve and the impact it's had on them. So no, it's still relatively new in my mind.
Can I take you back to when you got that call to when you found out that an 11-year-old boy had been shot in Croxteth? Just tell us about that first of all, what that was like.
Yeah, I'd been working that day. I came home quite latish. We were gonna have a barbecue with some of the kids' friends, some family members, and I just got home, taking the top off a bottle of beer, and then I received a phone call from one of the staff saying that 11-year-old boy had been shot and killed in Croxteth. And my initial thoughts were, my God, what's an 11-year-old boy involved in this sort of crime, not fully being aware of the circumstances? So I decided to go to Stanley Road Police Station, where I was based at the time, to get more details. Got more details and then went up to the scene, and by which time I'd established that Rhys was an innocent 11-year-old boy. And started inquiries at the scene with other staff, not for 1 minute thinking I was going to be the lead investigator. And then we had a meeting the early hours of that morning. ACC Gallen chaired the meeting, and she said to me that I was going to be the senior investigating officer, which I was more than happy to do, but I thought there might have been others ahead of me. And that was it, really. It kicked off from then.
How did you feel being given that role in the investigation, and the fact that, like you said, it was an 11-year-old boy who was in the wrong place at the wrong time?
I was quite comfortable with the fact that I was going to be the SIO. My capabilities, confidence in myself and my abilities. The fact that it was an 11-year-old boy was significant, really, because why should something like that happen in this city? It was unbelievable. I was determined to get the inquiry up and running as quickly as possible, and determined to bring those responsible to justice.
What was the hardest moment for you during this investigation?
There were two really emotionally difficult parts. One was going to the post-mortem of Rhys. That was very, very disturbing. And then when I first met Mel and Steve, his mum and dad, Mel was clearly visibly upset, as was I. And there was one stage where she was comforting me. She got hold of my hand and was caressing it and looking into my eyes. And when I looked into her eyes, that's when I knew the enormity of the investigation. And I was more than determined then to bring those to justice, the killed Rhys. But that was a difficult moment, that's for sure.
Can I ask you about the first time you saw Rhys? What was that like, and how did you feel as well?
I saw Rhys in the the mortuary itself. He was lying on the slab waiting to be examined by Dr. Paul Johnson, the pathologist. And yeah, I remember staring at Rhys and just thinking how sad it was and how wrong it was. But we just had to get on with it and do what we were paid to do, and that's what we did. But that was a difficult moment, yeah.
Obviously, understandably, emotions highly charged as well. A very upsetting time for everybody.
Yeah, it was emotional, but I kept those emotions in check as best I could, because it was important that we were professional and we went about our job in the manner that we were used to. And as a consequence, we managed to bring those responsible to justice.
What was it like to handle the enormity of the case? It was obviously a very well publicised case. The eyes of the UK really were on Merseyside at that time.
Yes, there were. And my job was to make sure the team were shielded from that. The fact that the press and the world were involved, you know, interested in the case was understandable, but I detached myself from that sort of thing and just kept myself involved in the case and all the aspects of the case to make sure that what we were doing was the right things. So the press and everything else outside was a different world to me. I just, and obviously now and again I had to go out and make public appeals and those sorts of things, but in the main I didn't think about the press and because if you did, you wouldn't be able to function properly. You know, Pat Gallen, she came to one briefing and was saying about the Prime Minister had been on the phone and so on and so forth to the team. And I just said afterwards, look, forget the Prime Minister, forget anybody else. Your main function is to bring those responsible for this murder to justice. But more importantly, there's three people involved here, and they should be the targets of your inquiry. That's Mel, Steve, and Owen, Reece's brother, and that's what we did.
You obviously were very close to Mel and Steve. What was it like to see how they were battling through their worst nightmare through that time?
Well, when I first met them, I just got this feeling that they were genuine, decent people, and I had minimal contact with them at first, but most of the contact about the inquiry and how we were progressing was through the family liaison officers, and that's their function. But there were key moments within the investigation that I met them and gave them updates and so on and so forth, and during those meetings and over the course of the investigation and the court process, we became closer, and to this day I still keep in touch with them, so because they are genuinely lovely people.
What were the biggest challenges in the investigation? We've heard a lot about the wall of silence that was facing officers at that time.
The biggest problems we came across was the lack of forensic evidence at the scene. The weapon used was a revolver, so it didn't discharge any casings. The CCTV we had at the scene was very grainy, not the best in the world. So those sorts of things made it difficult from the beginning. But as I say, when we went through a systematic approach and slowly but surely things started to unfold. And then obviously we had a key break when we recovered the weapon itself. And a boy came into that. Was referred to as Boy X. He became a witness for us, and that was a significant moment.
That was a key part of the investigation, wasn't it? Was there any point during the investigation into Reece's death that you had any doubts of whether you would find who was ultimately responsible?
No. I was confident from the outset that we would bring those responsible to justice, and never doubted that for a moment, and that came across to Mel and Steve. And I've got to say, Mel and Steve, out of anybody, could have been more demanding of me, but they weren't. They trusted me. If I said something, they believed me, and that was the basis of our relationship, really. And fortunately, I was able to bring them to justice, and Mercer, the killer, is still inside now.
How did that make you feel that Mel and Steve trusted you 100% with this?
Oh, it's a massive, massive thing to have. If somebody doesn't trust you, then why are you doing it? And to have that trust from them in me was very important, really, and significant. So once the results came in after the trials, the initial elation for Mel and Steve was apparent to me, but obviously they've still got to live with the fact that their son has been killed for no reason.
When you got those verdicts, can I ask you about that? What was that like to when the trials had ended? What was running through your thoughts? Obviously, a really long investigation on your part, how did you feel?
I felt, as I say, and I'm not being funny when I say this, I felt confident throughout. So the results were of no surprise, didn't come as any surprise to me. But obviously I felt gratification, if you like, that it's all the hard work that resulted in this verdict. But as I say, Mel and Steve, despite their initial elation, and I'm sure they've got something from it, but they've still got to carry the fact that Reece is no longer here, and that's very sad.
What are your thoughts on Mercer and Yates and those who really tried to cover what happened that day as well?
I tried not to get involved in the emotional aspect of it with Mercer, and to me they were just suspects who we'd gathered enough evidence to convict him. And to, you know, the evidence which stood appeals afterwards. So I didn't feel any hatred towards them, because the lifestyles they lived beggared belief, really. Smoking spliffs all day, playing on games, and obviously access to firearms. So it was a bizarre world they lived in like this.
Obviously, Mercer was the one who shot Reece, is now serving a sentence for that. What do you think of the others, particularly maybe Yates, who supplied the gun as well? Is he as, if not more, responsible for what happened to Reece?
They were all as bad as each other, really. Yates, his initial sentence was 7 years, which I strongly believe was unduly lenient, and as a consequence, so did the CPS, and we went through the process and went down to the Royal Courts of Justice. And I remember his girlfriend being in court when he got the initial sentence, and she was laughing and smiling and so on and so forth. And then we went down to the Royal Court of Justice, and she was there with Yates' sister, I think it was. And after he got an additional sentence put on him, I went past and I just said, "You're not laughing now, are you?" Because she was in tears. I thought he should have got longer, but that's justice. I've got no control over that.
So what is life like for you now? You've obviously left the force at the moment. You're retired, I should say. How often do you look back at what happened to Reece and obviously the investigation as well?
As I said earlier, most days you think about some aspect of the investigation, and it's difficult to forget something because, you know, you touched on it. It was a massive investigation. Received massive public attention, but these sorts of experiences, now being interviewed by you and other experiences, are like cathartic for me. You know, it allows me to go over the process and try and put it into some context. So
you've been able to visit Reece's grave, if that's correct. I mean, can I ask about that as well?
I've been twice to his grave, yeah. Just because, and I said this to Mel, I said, "I've never been to his grave." She said, go to it. And it's not far from here. And it's, you know, it's a tribute to him and to Everton Football Club, who have been very supportive of the family. Excellent club. Even though I'm a Liverpool supporter, but they're, you know, they're fantastic what they've done. Yeah, so the grave, I don't know, it's just a tribute to him, really.
How do you feel, well, how did you feel when you paid those two visits?
Sad, very sad. Just to think, as I say, an 11-year-old boy, I met one of his mates who played football with him at the time. And he was playing golf at my golf club, and I think he was 18 at the time. And I thought, God, that Reece could be that age. It's unbelievable. It's such a sad case when you think about it in its entirety, and it's that sadness will never go away, really.
Because a lot of people would always say when they talk about what happened to Reece that it could have been any 11-year-old boy. It could have been any family caught up in something like that as well.
Well, it could have been, because if you've got someone who's got a gun and they're firing across a car park on a warm summer's evening, anybody could have been hit and killed. Unfortunately, it was Reese, and you know, he could have gone a different way and it wouldn't have happened, but it did, and that's the fact of the matter. So you've just got to deal with that.
Ask about your friendship with Mel and Steve. You see them quite often as well. I mean, what's that like to be? You're obviously very close with them.
You'd have to ask them that. No, I mean, as I say, they're a lovely couple. I went out with Steve a few weeks back for a couple of drinks. I say a couple. That man can drink. And but you know, even when we're having our pints, there's someone put a pint on the table for him and came over to talk to him. Was an Everton supporter, and I just said to Steve, "It must be really strange for it, you know, every time you go out." He said, "Well, it happens quite often, but." That was life. And then I went to the Solus and came back, and this guy realised who I was then, because obviously Steve had told him, and he's shaking my hand. He said, "Even though you're a red," he said, "I'll shake your hand." So it was one of those things. But no, as I say, Mel, I don't see them regularly, but you know, we're in contact, and we have been because of the recent programme, Little Boy Blue. But you know, I hope that that continues for the rest of my life. And in fact, we've got plans to get together soon to go for a drink or two.
You were heavily involved in Little Boy Blue. What was that like to go through that process?
It was difficult because you're bringing the past up, and then Jeff Pope, who wrote it, was quite probing in his questions, you know, to get to the truth of the matter, and that brought things back. So yeah, it was emotionally stressful, but also, you know, there were some light-hearted moments as well.
What did you think when you saw it on the television screens then?
I thought the program was excellent. It's obviously it's factual, but I think it portrayed the right picture overall and gave a good account of what happened.
And it's important to stress that it would have never happened if it wasn't for Mel and Steve giving it their blessing and helping through that entire process as well.
Yeah. When I first retired, the producer, Kwajo Dejan, he got in touch with me, and I said, "I'm not going to go anywhere near this unless you speak to Mel and Steve, and they give it the blessing. And if they do, then I'll become involved. If they say no, then it's not going to happen."
The fact that it showed that side, I suppose, as well, particularly Mel and Steve, that not a lot of people would see, and particularly your investigation, the side that not a lot of people would have seen or heard about until now as well.
No, because they obviously went through some difficulties and they split up, which wasn't communicated to me, but I strongly suspected there were some issues. And it's understandable, given what they went through. But I'm delighted that they're both back together now. And, you know, they're still making every effort to move on with their lives.
Can I ask about the issue of gun crime? Even 10 years on from Reese's death, it's incredible to think that we're still talking about shootings it happening in the city. I know you retired from the force, but when you hear that there's been another shooting, when you hear somebody else has been hurt in another shooting on Merseyside, how does that make you feel?
It's disappointing, because following on from the conviction of Mercer and his mates, there was a huge growth in public confidence, satisfaction in Merseyside Police, and rightly so. There was a reduction in gun crime, but to see it still growing, I know the police are doing their best efforts, but they can't do it on their own. And you know, when you've got victims who live and they refuse to speak to you, it's very difficult to deal with those sorts of crimes. But it's so sad that it's still going on. It's unbelievable, given the fact that an 11-year-old boy was killed. You would think that would maybe have some impact upon those involved in it, but it clearly doesn't.
Are you worried that we could see another Reese or something similar happen in the city?
It could happen. You know, where firearms are involved, it's it's unbelievable because they are lethal weapons, and if they, you know, even if they fire at buildings and there's a ricochet, the ricochet could go off and hit somebody. So yes, another Reach could happen, and that would be very, very sad if it did.
What can be done to prevent that? Everyone does not want to see another Reece Jones happening on the streets of Merseyside.
Well, as I say, the police are doing what they can, but they can't do it without public engagements. And it's important that the people who know where these guns are, the people that are involved, that they give the police information so that they can act upon it and try and do something to bring these people to justice. But it won't happen unless the public get involved. And there's obviously a fear aspect in that. The police have got measures they can put in place to support anybody who comes forward with that information. So if anyone is going to listen to this, then please, please get involved with it.
When people look back on the 22nd of August and what happened to Reece on the 10 years since he passed away, what kind of lessons do you hope people get from what happened to Reece?
Well, the lessons are evident, aren't they? It's basically an 11-year-old boy is being killed. If you weren't involved in the original, or you weren't aware of the original investigation, hopefully you'll watch Little Boy Blue. If you haven't, watch it, because that'll bring home to you what this does. It's just not about the individual that's being killed. It's the ripple effect. It affects everybody around it. So yeah, that's the best message I can give, is watch it, learn from it.